welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
February 6, 2019, thank you for joining me. I have some good stuff to start with today, some important stuff, I should say, actually some bad important stuff to start with today. About four topics I want to get into in regard to the anti-BDS law, or rather the Strengthening the Middle East Act of 2019, which includes a lot of things, most of them beneficial to Israel, as well as something in regard to Syria and kind of the, like we've kind of been talking about on this show, like the kind of changing of the guard, where it's basically U.S. saying they're going to leave, and I really don't think they will, but rather making sure other people come in and fill their place instead of just letting it get back to the way it's supposed to be, which is controlled by Syria, the sovereign government of Syria. And interestingly enough, a weapons shipment that's allegedly been intercepted by Venezuela's Maduro government that was coming in from the United States, under the guise, I would assume, of humanitarian aid, which is very, very interesting. So we're going to get into all of that today. But I want to start with the topic that's probably a lot important to a lot of people today, whether you're for Israel, against Israel, the idea that we're now being told that we can and cannot, what we can and cannot boycott, which is unconstitutional, as multiple judges have ruled, and yet they did it anyway, telling us we don't have the right to boycott what we wish, at least in regard to U.S. allies. Not just Israel, but remember that the verbiage in this bill actually kind of outlines the idea that it can be applied to U.S. allies in general, Saudi Arabia being an important one. This coming from Middle East Eye, anti-BDS bill clears first major hurdle in U.S. Congress. Now, first, before we get into this, I want to point something out. That in a previous show that I did about this, we were talking about this, and as the article that we read, coming from InPress News, said that it advanced in the Senate, and I actually, in my own coverage, looking back on it, I mistakenly said multiple times that it passed the Senate, and that was my mistake. I'm sorry if I misled anybody. It wasn't intentional. It was just because it slipped it was a mistake in my part, you know, using the wrong word. So I want to make sure I said that before I went forward, so people aren't confused or going, wait a minute, didn't this already pass? The first part was the roll call where they're voting to proceed into the Senate. This is the vote to actually pass the Senate, both of which are very important, both of which show you that the majority, as it were, voted to make sure that this passed. Now, also remember that this still has to pass the House and then go through Trump's desk to actually become law. But it's alarmingly, as we can see when we get into who voted for what, it's very clear that the vast majority of our Congress, and as Trump's overwhelmingly pro-Israel speech at a State of the Union yesterday pointed out, it seems like it's pretty clear where they're headed with this. But this is a very big step in the wrong direction. Now, the U.S. Senate has indeed voted overwhelmingly, and that's important, in favor of this bill that encourages states to cut off contractors who boycott Israel. Also a measure included in a wider Middle East policy bill that reinforces Washington's support for Israel and Jordan. Now, the Jordan aspect, the more funding going to the Middle East, which is, again, directly helping Israel's foreign policy, as well as a bill, I think it's the Caesar something, I forget the exact name of it, but it's basically reinitiating sanctions on Syria, which it goes against exactly, like, completely what the current administration, or at least I should say what Trump says he doesn't want to do. But all of it, the entire thing, is beneficial to Israel's foreign policy. And remember, this was the very first bill put forward by our Senate in 2019, the new Congress, the 116th Congress, after all that's going on. This is the first thing they put forward. Think about that. Now, the proposal, the one specific part of this we're talking about in regard to all of it, is named the Combating BDS Act of 2019, which is very clear. Combating Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Act, which is interesting. People always point out that instead of doing things around the law, around the system, this is an attempt to go through the system they're always telling us we need to participate in. We need to use the system the proper way to go through the right channels, and then we do, and then they shut it down, which is another perfect example of why the system is broken. Because even though they tell you to work through the system, when you try to, they shut it down and call it. Now they're labeling this a terrorist organization, which is absolutely disconnected from reality. This is a legal attempt to exercise our rights to boycott and divest and then sanction Israel for what they're doing to the Palestinian people. Now, this act, in reference to, I guess again, the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions movement, which seeks to pressure Israel economically and politically, not violently, to end its abuses against Palestinians. Now, the bill, of course, passed 77-23 on Tuesday. And it says U.S. states can divest from contractors they disagree with on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And this is the U.S. can, they basically the idea that this, that that's one of the ideas of the BDS Act. And this is something that they're saying is no longer essentially allowed, or rather gives the states the ability to circumvent this and tell you on the state level. But clearly this goes much, much further than that. Now, every Republican, but one, voted in favor of the anti-BDS or the combating BDS Act or an anti-BDS bill. And that was Rand Paul. Now, and Democrats were split 25-22. Now, many are always asking, always want to know how the voting went down. So as you, and this will be listed in the show notes as well, so you can see for yourself who voted for what. Now, nearly every potential Democratic presidential contender, including Senators Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand, Kamala Harris, and Elizabeth Warren, as well as those considering 2020 candidacies, including Bernie Sanders, voted against the legislation, which I found very interesting because someone like Kamala Harris has a very clear tie to Israel, and yet they're voting against it. Now, this could clearly be an attempt to kind of hide that connection as they go into 2020, similarly to the way that Trump did. You know, wasn't very well hidden, but it wasn't something that was discussed. Now we know, we can clearly see the Adelson connection. We can clearly, he's called the most pro-Israel president in the history of the United States. But I wonder why they would vote against this when you can clearly see an Israeli connection. I think that is what they're trying to get ahead of the game. That's my opinion. Maybe they're really against it. Who ultimately knows? But that's my opinion. But it's important to know that these people didn't vote for it. Now, free speech and Palestinian advocacy groups have slammed the bill, accusing its sponsors of trying to muzzle criticism of Israel at the expense of the U.S. Constitution. And this is where it comes down to for people that are trying to make this about an anti-Israel thing. I mean, clearly we have every possible excuse to be against it, the government of Israel, for all of the horrible things they're doing, all of the violations of international law, all of the actions they're taking with impunity that any other country would get completely lambasted for from the United States specifically. But all of that aside, regardless of whether you're boycotting Israel or anybody else, this is unconstitutional to say that we cannot boycott a country because they pass a law. And remember, just because it's a law does not make it moral, doesn't make it right. And it also shows you that how disconnected our Congress has become from its constituency. Now, Republican Senator Marco Rubio, who of course introduced this measure, has fiercely argued in its defense, saying that states have a right to boycott the boycotters. But here's where this is absolutely ridiculous. If you as an individual want to boycott the fact that I'm boycotting, that's your right. But as the government, this is where they're muddling the idea here. The government is not this, they can't, this is the government telling you can't boycott. The government's not boycotting our boycott. The government's coming in and saying, guess what? You can't boycott. This is just typical political nonsense, trying to manipulate the situation. And this is what we're going to hear, I can promise you, from supporters of this. Oh, we're boycotting the boycotters. No, the government's shutting down the boycott. That's what's happening. Now, the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, also called on House members to drop the anti-BDS Act because of the threat it poses to Americans' rights to free speech. It says, quote, "Today the Senate chose politics over the Constitution and trampled on the First Amendment rights of all Americans." Now, while Rubio's bill boosts local and state efforts against boycotting Israel, it also extends the boycotts of Israeli-controlled territories, effectively targeting boycotts of Israeli businesses in the illegal occupied Palestinian West Bank and Syrian Golan Heights. Basically saying that, so the idea is that these are the things that we are talking about. The illegal occupation of land. You know, international law violations. But no, now this is included. We can't boycott anything. We can't boycott products coming from these areas. We can't boycott, and that's a big one. People talking about boycotting products coming from the occupied West Bank. But no, now because of Marco Rubio and all of the people who voted for this, at least from the Senate, and assuming it passes the rest, which I assume it will, that's my opinion, this will be off the table, violating your constitutional rights. Now on Tuesday, Senator Rand Paul, again, the lone Republican who voted against the bill, said the right to boycott is an essential part of free speech, as guaranteed by the First Amendment of the United States. Now, as much as I have plenty, there's things that I could criticize about Rand Paul in the past, and things that he's done that I think shows me that at least he's playing the game a little too much for my taste, it's nice to see somebody stand up for what's real. You know, acknowledging the fact that we actually have constitutional rights, and that they're not allowed to just pass a law that infringes on them. You know, shall not be infringed. And this is dereliction of duty in regard to being a United States congressman or woman. Now it says, quote, "It is a fundamental aspect of freedom to be able to dissent, to protest, even when everybody thinks you're wrong." That is very important to think about. That's what America is about, he said on the Senate floor while speaking about this. Now I'll say that again. It is a fundamental aspect of freedom to be able to dissent, to protest, even when everybody thinks you're wrong. And I don't think that's the case now. But the point is that even if it's the most disgusting, horrendous thing ever, if you feel it's right, you have a right to dissent, to protest. Now, last week, Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen accused Rubio of aiming to restrict free speech, calling anti-BDS state laws blatantly unconstitutional. So it's nice to see that there are other politicians that are involved that are saying that this is wrong. Now, dozens of states have passed various forms of anti-BDS bills in recent years, as we've talked about, Texas being the foremost. But several of those measures are currently being challenged in courts across the country. And as we continually point out, federal judges in Arizona and Kansas have declared the anti-BDS bills, or rather just anti-boycott laws in general in these states, as entirely unconstitutional. Now, remember that these are federal judges who are ruling, which is how our system is supposed to work. They are setting a precedent. They ruled that this is unconstitutional. Now, these are our members of Congress, by and large, saying that we just don't care what the judges say. We don't care what the Americans think. And this is what the article talks about, is they're putting politics ahead of what's supposed to be their guiding light in all of this, which is the Constitution of the United States, which is what our inherent rights, that it outlines, that we don't get anything from the Constitution. The Constitution outlines what we have, God-given inherent rights. Well, it's very sad to recognize such a blatant example of the fact that our Congress no longer works for the American people, at least not all the time. And I would argue even the times when it seems like they're doing something that we want, it's likely because it aligns with their agenda, not because it's what we actually want. I really want people to focus on this concept and recognize that Israel is a main factor here. If you can't recognize the overwhelming influence Israel has on America's foreign policy, which we're going to get into more in a moment in regard to Syria, in regard to Yemen, in regard to all of these things, then you're really just closing your eyes to the reality, because it's all right there in front of you. But even without Israel being involved, to let this happen is to literally take away your constitutional rights, your inherent constitutional rights, rights that are not given to you by any man. Which means they can't technically take them away, but they're passing laws that will say, if you do this, we're going to throw you in a cage. That's freedom, ladies and gentlemen. Now, it's very alarming to see this, but hopefully we can spread this information and try to do everything we can to stop it from passing the House. Because I can guarantee you, Trump is going to sign it, as he basically said he would last night. Now, moving on to the next story, in regard to Venezuela, in regard to seizing weapons shipments being shipped into Venezuela to support the Guaido regime. Allegedly, because anything could be, you know, and this is coming from the Venezuelan government, so this could just as easily be propaganda. But it's important to recognize this based on the history of the United States. Now, entitled "Venezuela Seizes U.S. Weapons Shipment as Trump Vows to Support Noble Quest for Freedom." And again, that's a throwback to the State of the Union address. Now, I actually thought about really diving through this. I did a show last night with Nathan about it, and I could do a 3-hour show about all of the lies and misinformation and deceptions that went on in that ridiculous show of emotional manipulation. All of it. With very little discussion of actually, you know, the State of the Union, but and really just selling you talking points. But one of the real big ones was talking about Venezuela, of course, had to throw that in there, and supporting their noble quest for freedom, ignoring all of the U.S. actions involved in it. Which is pretty damn obvious if you really look at it. But now we have Venezuela seizing a weapons shipment. And we kind of just talked about this. Now, this is an interesting story. You know, Donald Trump has expressed full support for the Venezuelan opposition to oust President Nicolas Maduro from power. you know, democracy, they claim, to unilaterally name somebody else in charge. Now, just as the country's authorities, of course, announced they had seized this cache of weapons, allegedly delivered from the United States, as they're saying. And it's all, there's a lot going on here. Now, the U.S.-made weapons were discovered at the storage yard of Arturo International Airport in the Venezuelan city of Valencia. The Interior Ministry said this on Tuesday, yesterday. Now, the stash included at least 19 rifles and 118 magazines, high-caliber ammunition, as well as 90 radios and 6 mobile phones, and was likely sent from Miami, Florida on Sunday, according to the authorities. Now, an investigation to determine the intended recipient of the shipment has been launched. Now, understand that 19 rifles, it's not really that much in the bigger scheme of things, which is, I guarantee, what the supporters of the pro-interventionists are going to say. But this is still a dramatic violation, especially if it did, in fact, come from the United States. And it goes against everything they claim they're trying to do. You know, support people. And what this appears to be, if it did indeed come from the United States, is a isolated, executed operation. 19 rifles, 118 magazines, lots of ammunition, high-caliber ammunition, as well as 90 radios and 6 mobile phones. So this seems like an operation that was supposed to be going off. Maybe another assassination attempt. And this is just spitballing. But clearly something was about to go down, if indeed this did come from the United States. And it says was likely sent from Miami, Florida. This is what the authorities believe. And it's something that we have been covering, the idea of this, in regard to, you know, the buildup, supposed buildup in Brazil, supposed buildup in Colombia, none of which have really been definitively proved, but certainly makes sense. Now, while the U.S. never ruled out a military option, and they've repeatedly said that, making sure we know we've never ruled out that military option to support Guaido's claim to power, so far Washington has called for a peaceful transition of power in Latin America, of course, which is what they always do, and then backhandedly carry out deceptive acts that destabilize a country and kill civilians. That's not hyperbole. This is just basic history of all the, like, especially in South America, which they really don't want you talking about. Now, they said, quote, "We stand with the Venezuelan people in their noble quest for freedom." This Trump said this during his State of the Union address, offering full support for the Venezuelan opposition and the leader of the National Assembly, which is basically the same thing. The Venezuelan opposition is his following, and the few people have defected. He says, "We condemn the brutality of Maduro regime," blaming Caracas and socialism in general. Broadly, just kind of socialism in general, for the economic downfall of the country, strangled, of course, by U.S. sanctions. Now, this is, we're going to get into more in a moment about some oil discussions here, but this is absolutely the ability of them to continue to assert these facts as if they're facts. When it's very easy to recognize that their actions have a huge role in why they're struggling. Even if it was already struggling, what they did made it 10 times worse. And this is helping people. The economic downturn of this country was, and by the way, remember that the vast majority of Venezuelans agree the U.S. sanctions are responsible. So do people like the former expert of the UN and people like Weizenbrot and people that have talked about this, people that are, their opinions matter, and said, yeah, the U.S. sanctions did this. And they just reassert the same thing over and over and over. The same way they kind of used to continue to say Assad used chemical weapons, and then would go back and say, "But we have no proof to show that." Pompeo said that. Mattis said that. And then later, Nikki Haley would say, "Oh, he's done it 3 times, and we know." And it's like, "Well, we just said you can't prove that." This is what they do over and over. They repeat it. The classic line: repeat it enough times, people will begin to believe it, regardless of whether it's true. Now, as I recently pointed out, U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton tweeted that the United States will begin humanitarian aid shipments to Venezuela. Interestingly timed. And if the history gives us any insight, I said this in that last show, such as in Syria, it's that military actions are regularly taken by the U.S. under a banner of humanitarianism. Now, I so often say, you know, I'm not psychic. It's so very clear to see how repetitive they are with the same things they do in every regime change over and over, the same old lines, the same old actions, because guess what? They've worked in the past. People bought them. But I begin to think that people aren't falling for it anymore. As you can see, he says, pursuant to the request of interim President Juan Guaido, and in consultation with his offices, the U.S., his officials, the few people around him, the U.S. will mobilize and transport humanitarian aid, medicine, surgical supplies, national supplements for the people of Venezuela, which, interesting, by the way, by their own admission, they were still getting through, apparently, even though they had the sanctions and the blockade, but now they need them. See, it's funny how their own propaganda also all too often contradicts their previous statements. And it says it's time for Maduro to get out of the way. Now, remember, this comes after the U.S.-backed coup leader, Guaido, declared his willingness to accept the so-called aid as the unelected self-declared interim president, despite the United Nations recently affirming that Nicolas Maduro is the only legitimate head of state, directly contradicting the White House. But they don't talk about that. The UN is just all they use the UN for is if the UN backs them, then they use it and say, oh, the UN's behind us. But if they don't back them, they just don't ignore it and move forward anyway. That's all it really is for them. Now, as I said before, as one writer pointed out, this raises the interesting scenario or possibility of the U.S. initiating covert humanitarian shipments across the border, because Maduro was not against this. And it seems pretty obvious why now, likely from Colombia, in defiance of Maduro's ban on these actions. Now, and it further raises the question, as this guy again must be psychic, how long until Syria-style U.S. covert weapon shipments make their way into, quote, humanitarian supply lines? Think about that. Now, troops on the Colombian border is something else that I've been seeing thrown around, and sadly, as always, far too many independent commentators are saying, there's troops on the border, this is happening, and then we can't prove that. I have no doubt that it's probably true. They've probably been there from the very beginning, but I can't prove that. It hasn't been definitively proven. There's been random anonymous videos that you can't verify of moving convoys and things like that. But as far as I can tell, it hasn't been definitively proven that there are indeed U.S. troops in Brazil or Colombia. But again, you ask me my opinion, I would say, yeah, I'm pretty damn sure they're probably there. But it's always important to not say things that we can't prove, which is what the mainstream media does. And we don't want to be like the mainstream media. So all those independent commentators, please stop saying it's for sure, because we don't know that. But again, it's probably true. Now, all of this, like all things, could be a lie, could be propaganda, right? That's just Maduro lying and setting this up. Yeah, that could definitely be true. But history has shown us that this is exactly what the U.S. does. And if we have nothing else to go on, we need to look at the past history, the verified actions of these groups involved. And the U.S. does this, just like it was exposed in Syria. They lied to us. No, we're not supporting those rebels over there. No. Oh, yeah, now we are, but they're good guys, right? The story evolves, and they do this over and over, these covert shipments of weapons to people, basically anyone, in Syria's case, willing to fight Assad, even recognized terrorist groups, which now they're working overtime to try to manipulate. In regard to, we just talked about Yemen, where now CNN's working overtime at this exclusive investigation after a year of us saying the same thing, that Saudis are giving weapons to Al-Qaeda and trying to distance the U.S. from that, even though it's very clear that this is what they do over and over and over. This is documented history, people. So, whether or not this is real, we need to recognize this is what they have done. So it's very easy to at least assume it's probably real. But who knows? But it's important to talk about and recognize that this is something they're aggressively trying to overthrow this country. And knowing this is what they do, it all lines up. Now, another story coming from Venezuela, this is an important one. We just talked about involving ExxonMobil and Halliburton, credibly behind the regime change because it benefits them financially. And as Whitney Webb wrote, that it's basically clear that this is a defining factor here. This is what is one of the large things driving this regime change machine in regard to Venezuela, because they've stopped them. They've hurt their profits by socializing the country. And this is especially in regard to Citgo and PDVSA, which is the state-owned Venezuelan company. And now, just like she outlined in the article, and just like we talked about, we now have it right from the horse's mouth. Guaido, as it were. Juan Guaido promises oil deals for U.S. gas giants if he takes power. Promises them. Man, this is just like Bolton openly said they were taking the oil And just like they all announced that we're overthrowing this country, this is one of the most overt, in-your-face regime changes that we've ever seen. Maybe it's because they recognize the past ones have been failing, that they need to just come right out and do it. And to some degree, that's better. At least we can see what they're doing. At least they're being honest about it. But it doesn't make it okay. It doesn't make it right. It's the worst possible thing. But see, it's not actually all up front because they're still pretending to do it for the people. They're still pretending under the guise of humanitarianism. We need to save these people from our starvation sanctions. Which is just the ridiculous hypocrisy of it all. But now he's saying outright, just like we've thought all along. He said, the article begins, making the empire's ambitions clear. U.S. stooge Juan Guaido has promised Venezuelan oil to U.S. corporations. Exactly like we thought. Now, the U.S.-backed illegitimate government of Juan Guaido, unelected, you know, democracy, as they keep saying, oh, it's great to see this democracy coming back to it, where we just point at somebody and say he's president. But the illegitimate government of Juan Guaido has said there will be plenty of money to be made for Wall Street under a government without current President Nicolas Maduro. That is, how do you misunderstand that? This is him saying, look, all the people supporting just doing this for money, if you help me get this done, there's going to be lots of profit for all of you corporate capitalist, you know, like the opposite of what Venezuelans actually want or even need. They're all talking about saving the people while he's saying, come help us and I'll give you all of our resources, basically. Or at least you can come in and reap them wildly while you give me some profit too, right? Because this is what an actual dictator looks like. Understand that. Now, according to reports, this offer was made during a meeting between U.S. officials and delegates of the Guaido cabinet in Washington. Of course, because that's where you conduct Venezuelan policy, is in Washington with, you know, Guaido's cabinet. Which is funny. Now, apparently, Guaido has promised that if he should take control of the actual levers of state power in Venezuela, he would end the control over Venezuelan oil projects currently given to the state oil company, PDVSA. Now, understand that the point of this is this is nationalized. The state oil company, at least before the U.S. seized it all, because that went back to the people. That's the idea of this, which people would, you know, the pro-intervention would be like, oh, you're crazy. He's a dictator and he was just giving it all to himself. Which is, there's nothing to verify that, and plenty to verify that it all did go to the people. As he pointed out, free healthcare, free homes, free all kinds of things. And I'll get into that more in a moment. Now, Guaido reassured U.S. speculators that, quote, the majority of the oil production that we want to increase will be with the private sector. Just right out in the front. But we already know this. He's already said the first thing he wanted to do, which is funny, while they say the country is suffering and people are starving to death, the first action he takes is we're going to privatize the oil because that's going to help the people. In fact, it will do the exact opposite. It's funny how the reality of the actions they take, just like with the anti-BDS Act, the first bill they pass in the Senate, shows you that what their real intentions are. It has nothing to do with helping people, Americans or Venezuelans. Helping the elite ruling class. Now that we have confirmed, we have actual confirmation that Guaido does, in fact, intend to immediately begin selling off rights to Venezuela's resources, you know, if he should ever get power, we know exactly where Citgo's profits will go in the future. It's clear that at first he says he wants to control himself, but that Guaido may, you know, desperately want to control these Citgo and PDVSA assets so that because he's very clearly willing to sell them to Wall Street should he get the chance, as his own statements have made very clear. And selling these things to Wall Street has nothing to do with helping Venezuelans. Now, this idea that selling off PDVSA, the state-owned Venezuelan oil company, to companies like Exxon, interestingly enough, one of the oil giants that was kicked out of Venezuela by Hugo Chavez. Remember talking about Whitney's article, that this is one of the main reasons why that drove this. Can't affect corporate profits of the empire machine that we're talking about here. But the idea that selling off these companies to groups like Exxon will somehow make things better for the average citizens of the country is ridiculous in every possible way. It means the exact opposite. Now, beyond the sheer stupidity and obvious theft, however, this narrative put forth by Guaido and the U.S. media totally whitewashes what is, for all intents and purposes, a U.S. economic blockade of Venezuela and the host of sanctions on the nation's oil industry. Now remember, he just said, Trump said last night in his speech that, oh, it's one of the most oil-rich nations in the world, but they're stricken with poverty. There's a problem there. Yeah, they're stricken with poverty and they're oil rich, and that's happening because of U.S. actions. Like it's documented, as we continually show you, that they flooded the market, then they blocked them with sanctions so they couldn't get loans, and now they've seized the oil. So how do you expect them to use this oil to help the people if you're doing all of this to specifically manipulate the oil? Like, you have to be just absolutely brain dead to not see, at least consider how this plays a factor in why they're poverty stricken. And they see, they bank on this. They bank on the average stupidity of people that are just rather just the apathy. And I would say that it's the indoctrinated apathy from preschool on up to just trust them because it's easier. Listen to what they say and not research it, not look into whether these claims are true. Just, yeah, they're our leaders. They probably know what's best. And they're just lying to you, ignoring how this has a direct effect on all of this. Now, this pattern of abuse, these intentionally, mind you, abusive sanctions on Venezuelan oil production has carried on for years and continues to be a regular tactic imperial powers use on Venezuela. The Trump administration just enacted their own new sanctions, strictly on restricting the export of oil, like we just said, which is expected to further harm, guess what, the Venezuelan economy and the people there. But yeah, it's their fault. What are they doing with all that oil? Why don't they help the people? Because you're taking it all. Now, the oil coming out of the ground in Venezuela could right now easily be in the global market if it weren't for Washington's meddling. If that oil was on the market, the Bolivarian government would likely return to deploying the policies they've always championed. Verifiably so, mind you, such as public housing, subsidized medicine, price controls, healthcare, and other social welfare programs. Now, regardless of what you think about socialism, these are the very things that would help these people. And these are the things taken away by what they're doing. Pretty simple. Now, looking at it this way, it becomes obvious that the only people holding the Venezuelan people back are, interestingly, the same people promising freedom: the opposition's supposed friends in Washington. And as we've seen in the past, they promise all these things, freedom and liberation, yay, we're giving you democracy, and they take what they want and they leave, and the people suffer. As I continue to point out, in Libya, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Yemen, specifically now it's happening in the Ukraine, all over the world, multiple countries in South America, promising to do good things, and they put someone bad in place and they just take off. You know, like the Libyans right now being sold in a slave market. Yeah, that's really worked out for them. Now, all of this lays bare, as the article puts it, just what the U.S. is doing to Venezuela. Washington has no real concern of the average people actually being hurt in Venezuela. Instead, Washington is out to rip whatever resources it can away from the Venezuelan people, as it so often has in previous places. And by the way, which Trump said multiple times is exactly what he wants to do. Can't hide from the information forever, people. Forever, people. Think about that. For those that are trying to deny that this is, oh, it's a good thing. I know there are bad things happening, but we got to do it for the people. Take a look at the information. It's all right there, and realize that this has nothing to do with the people. It rarely does. Now, going back to Syria for a moment for the final story of the day, speaking of the past Syrian concepts, how this relates to Venezuela, interesting in regard to what we've been talking about before, about the U.S. actually pretending to leave Syria, but now we pretty much can tell that they're not. As we recently just talked about, we've seen a 50% increase in troops over the last month, the exact opposite of what's being promised. But another great article coming from Moon of Alabama: U.S. asks more countries to occupy northeast Syria. As we've continued to point out, that this doesn't, even if they do actually pull back everyone to Iraq, which is kind of just a ridiculous half-hearted measure, knowing that they're still right there on the border, that I could promise you they would still carry out operations into Syria. They would even if they weren't there, to be honest, that's my opinion. But even if they do pull everyone back to Iraq, which again is not taking them home, which is what he continues to pretend, they're asking other people to come in and fill the space, because it's not really about them being there. It's about continuing to destabilize the country. And what they continue to say, protect Israel and then challenge Iran for, you know, God knows why, as they haven't attacked anyone in over 100 years or so, or more than that, actually. I think it was like 17 something. I forget the number off the top of my head. While we're talking about a country that's currently overthrowing multiple countries. We sure need protection from that. And they said the same thing on the speech last night. This idea that we need to, well, they're the leading state sponsors of terror. There's nothing that backs that up. Ask yourself why they continue to reassert the same talking points with zero to back it up. It's not like, here's what Iran just did. Look at them sponsoring terrorism. No, they just say they are this. They're bad. As actually Trump, he just said in his speech, what I thought was hilarious. He went on to talk about how bad Iran was, and he said, "Oh, they're doing bad things." That's a direct quote. Oh well, I'm sold. Bad things. Oh, whew, well, that you sold me. They're bad. We got to get rid of them. There is nothing to back it up, and I challenge anyone to show me anything that actually shows me things that they've done. You could argue that they have policies in their country that you don't agree with, but that's not our place to say anything. Just like it's not our place to say anything in Venezuela. But if you could show me one example of something they're doing outside of the country that's affecting specifically the United States in any way, more importantly, the Middle East in a negative way at all, I'll talk about it on my show. But the reality is they're in Syria because they're invited to be there, regardless of what they're doing, which by all accounts and by everybody outside of the United States and Israel and Saudi Arabia, they're helping. And if all you're saying is, well, they're telling me different, so I listen to them, there's a problem there. And you need to recognize that you're trusting career liars. Pretty simple. And I could be wrong, too. That's always a possibility. But I'm trying to continually show you evidence to show you why I think what I think. Well, they just say, they're bad. They do bad things. Trust me. Pretty simple. Now, the Trump administration plans to replace U.S. troops in northeast Syria with those of various allies. Basically, anybody who will answer the call. Now, today, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo talked to foreign ministers and officials of the U.S. coalition against ISIS, you know, which is their euphemism for whatever they want it to mean. You know, the ISIS, the group that they're funding, arming and supporting and protecting. Yeah, that group, the coalition against them, which is really just there to fight Assad and Iran and whatever else they want to say, seems to change day by day. Now, he made a remark that seems to announce a request to these allies to send their troops to replace the U.S. forces in northeast Syria, which, on a good note, actually seems like it at least alludes to the fact that they might be leaving Syria. But again, I'm not going to hold my breath. Now, they're referencing the article, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on Wednesday reassured allies that the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria was not the end of America's fight. As they said, Trump has said the same thing to Israel, which again shows you that they're clearly not done with Syria, regardless of what they do. It goes on to say, and called on them to recommit to permanently defeating Islamic State in Syria and Iraq. See, this is how they circumvent the top, permanently fighting ISIS in those places. Yeah, ISIS, that's why. The point is permanently being in Syria and Iraq is what he's talking about. Now, Trump had just said that they were there to protect Israel and fight Iran. But now again, he's reasserting that we got to keep fighting ISIS. It's whatever works in the moment. It says, quote, our mission is unwavering, but we need your help to accomplish it, just as we've had over the past months and years, Pompeo said. To that end, we ask that our coalition partners seriously and rapidly consider requests that will enable our efforts to continue. And by efforts, continuing meaning occupation of Syria. That's what he's talking about. He adds, quote, those requests are likely to come very soon. Because, you know, Pompeo and Bolton are aggressively trying to stop U.S. from leaving at all. And it does actually kind of seem like Trump is trying to make that happen for whatever reason. But now they're just simply saying, okay, well, let's get in whoever we can. Everybody jump on Syria. Let's keep this destabilization going. Now, one of the participants of the meeting was the German foreign minister, who lamented about a vacuum that would be created when the U.S. troops withdraw, which we've talked about so many times, is a complete fallacy, showing very clearly that their presence in Iraq and Syria are what causes this to happen, not them leaving. This is the excuse used by these neocon war hawks to create the justification for why we need to go back or stay, as it always has been shown. And he says, quote, in Syria, we still have no clarity how a vacuum can be avoided after the announced U.S. troop withdrawal, so that now no new escalations of old conflicts and a resurgence of the Islamic State can happen. He added that the danger from the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq is by far not over. This is the German foreign minister. Now, as Moon points out, how come these politicians never learned physics? Which I thought was funny. He said, northeast Syria is not closed off from the atmosphere or the surrounding lands. That makes a vacuum there impossible. Which I love Moon of Alabama. It's always enjoyed his articles. Now, it's just former British ambassador to Syria, Peter Ford, offers a helpful guide to decoding the doublespeak in Syria, which was posted on 21st Century Wire, which I recommend you look at. It's basically a how-to guide of all the political doublespeak and what they these points they say, one of them being vacuum and what they really mean. There was like 15, 20 of them. It was hilarious. But it includes this one specifically, the term vacuum. The U.S. will be leaving a vacuum when it pulls troops out, actually meaning a restoration of law and order. Can't have that. That's really funny. Once the U.S. stops blocking the way, the Syrian government will turn to the currently U.S. controlled territory and will keep ISIS down, as it is doing in the rest of Syria. Think about that. That's what I said, the same thing. There's not going to be a vacuum because Syria is aggressively trying to take back its rightful territory and is very clearly stopping ISIS from rising up anywhere else in those territories that they currently occupy. It's, you know, interesting coincidence that the only places ISIS seem to continue to thrive is in U.S.-occupied territory. I wonder why that is. Now, the tone of the German foreign minister's remarks seems intended to prepare the German public for a military mission in northeast Syria. The same rhetoric. Oh, ISIS danger, we can't let the vacuum and all the blah, blah, blah. So basically preparing the German people to be behind some kind of escalation in Syria if the U.S. pulls out. Now, any foreign state would be crazy to commit to such a scheme, as a deployment of troops in this area would be, as Moon of Alabama points out, illegal under international law, against the will of the host country of Syria, against the will of NATO member and neighbor Turkey, which it is, but that's in regard to the Kurds. That's a whole other story that we've talked about. And in the midst of ethnic religious conflicts, without secure communication routes, and without a definite end. Now, think about that. The big ones being illegal under international law. Remember the days when they used to go to the United Nations and say, we have to do this. Everybody votes. And that they decide it's okay. Yeah, they go in and stop the evil, bad people. And I don't even think then it was really exactly what it was. But the reality is now it's just, oh, I see terrorists. We can just invade any country we want. That's pretty much what we're talking about. And now because the idea that if they no longer had the ISIS excuse, even under their own justification, they would no longer have a legal precedent. Because under the authorization for use of military force, it allows them this just unbelievable leash to be able to go out and just fight anybody anywhere. As long as they say, oh, terrorism. And we've seen clearly that they're the ones arming and funding and protecting at least some of these people. And that makes sense. While they throw them into a country they need to attack and go, oh, look, terrorism. And we could probably soon be seeing some kind of ISIS appearance in Venezuela. And we'll give them the excuse to go invade if it comes that far. But all of these countries are now using this guise under the real effort of being combating Iran, for carrying out Israel's foreign policy, and trying to de-seat Assad, which has been the real point, in regard to those other points as well. Now, of course, the real point, as I just said, a foreign troop deployment in northeast Syria specifically would help, guess who, Israel's aim to keep Damascus weak. All of this comes back to Israel's foreign policy and their clear manipulation of U.S. specifically, and all of these policies, and I would say NATO. But we have to recognize this. And this ties right back to the beginning about the U.S. passing a bill to stop us from being able to boycott Israel's actions and things just like this. Do you not see how it all connects? There's a much larger thing going on behind all of it. As we have these puppet politicians dancing and speaking about talking points, the real agenda moves on, unaffected. Just like it did during Bush, just like it did under Obama, just like it's doing now with Trump. On and on and on. And I really hope people can begin to see what's really going on. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I appreciate you all being here. As always, if this resonated with you, if you recognize what we're trying to do here, please spread the video, share the link around. And if you would like to support this channel, there's numerous ways you can do so. As we talked about, I'm actually wearing my Question Everything t-shirt right now as we speak, as I'm trying to pull up this image for you. But as you can see right here, if you'd like to buy a Question Everything t-shirt to support this channel, the proceeds will go to The Last American Vagabond. The link is in the show notes. And if you want to buy any other t-shirt on the website, put in the code Vagabond. It will help out my channel as well. And you see there's a bumper sticker there you can buy, as well as all the links in the show notes, cryptocurrency, anything else, because this whole outlet operates because of you. We're people funded. We have no corporate interests. We have no manipulating advertisers where I have to show a fancy flashlight or talk about gold every day. We're funded by you because you believe in what we're doing. And I believe in you. I believe the people out there have the ability to actually make things happen. Thank you, Marshall, for the super chat. And that's the point, is we have to work together. So whether it's me or anybody, get out there and support your independent media, because it's never been more important than today. So I love you all, and as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. There it is. Stay vigilant.